elect an acting chairperson to guide the proceedings for today. So I'm going to facilitate the election of the chairperson, acting chairperson for today's proceedings. I will acknowledge the nominee, seconder, and further nominees. May I recognize as Honorable Nobanda? Honorable Nobanda has nominated Honorable Ranto. Is there any seconder? No seconder. You're seconding?
I second the. It's all right. Let's second the chief whip of the party of this committee. Not the chief whip. The whip of the committee.
She's not. It's not the whip of the committee. Yeah, whip of the ANC. Yeah.
That's right. It's fine. Whatever it is.
Honorable Nobanda has nominated Honorable Ranto, and seconded by Honorable Kwangwa. Is there any other nominee? But he has already seconded another nominee. Yeah. Can I close it? Yeah. Thank you very much. May I please request Honorable Ranto to...
Good afternoon, honorable members and the officials from the Auditor General office and everybody else that is in the room. We have been dealing with the Office of the Auditor General for quite some time, which I think the Office of the Auditor General knows us and the members know them, people from the Office of the Auditor General. But because it has been too long and we have new members in the committee that have joined us, I think it is only proper for us to introduce ourselves. Just make a quick introduction of ourselves so that we give over to the Office of to Public Enterprises and the Office of the Auditor General to do so, and everybody else. Please, people who are seated at the back of the table, you are also going to introduce yourself. So when it comes to introducing yourself, don't stop, just carry on and introduce yourself. I am Zukiswa Ranto. I'm whip of the ANC in this committee. I will be chairing the meeting for today. Thank you very much.
Over to members.
My name is Nazir Paulson, and I'm standing in for my comrade Leanne Mathis.
Terry Stander, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Abem Zukwankwa, member of the Portfolio Committee, and the gentleman who almost became your chairperson for today. Shadow chairperson. Zugile Luyenge, I'm a member of the committee.
Gili Nobanda, member of the committee.
Naren Singh, good afternoon everybody, member of this committee.
Natasha Mazzoni, member of the committee and the Shadow Minister of Public Enterprises.
Good afternoon, my name is Tina Hlabesa, I'm from Public Enterprises.
Good afternoon, my name is Melanchthon Magobe from the Department of Public Enterprises.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Mohokare Sileke, Director General, Public Enterprises.
Good afternoon, my name is Jackie Mudisani, Department of Public Enterprises.
Good afternoon. My name is Carl Vessels from the Office of the Auditor General.
Afternoon, members. My name is Ivan Stubig. I'm a senior manager in the Office of the Auditor General.
Good afternoon, members. Zolisa Zokala from the Office of the Auditor General.
Afternoon. My name is Rod Nimni, the content advisor for the committee.
Thank you. Honorable Singh, do you have...
No, Jefferson, I'll wait for the introductions to be done, but I want to take a point in limine, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon, I'm Boutis Kosana from the Department of Public Enterprise.
Natalie Malkat, radio journalist, Eyewitness News.
From Larry Diamond, TMG.
This thing in front of me is not working. It's okay. Thank you, Honorable Singh.
Yeah, Chairperson, no, thank you very much. I didn't want to disturb those people that were introducing themselves to us. My understanding, Chairperson, is when we last met and we decided that we should have this meeting, that this meeting was going to be a briefing by the Office of the Auditor General to the Portfolio Committee so that we could understand the report that they had submitted on behalf of the department. And tomorrow we have an opportunity where the department and the director general would be present, where they will present their report and we will interrogate them on all matters, including the audit report that was submitted. Now, I say this from my SCOPA experience, having served on SCOPA for many, many, many years, and the Office of the Auditor General can confirm this, and that before we meet a department that we've identified, we get a briefing from the Office of the Auditor General so that we can have an understanding ourselves as members of what the auditor is saying in terms of the audit, and we can question the Office of the Auditor General. Now, I'm surprised to see here today, and maybe it's no fault of theirs, that there are ladies and gentlemen from the Department of Public Enterprises who are welcome, because we always welcome you to all these meetings. But I just want to go back to the understanding that we had of this particular meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Singh. That's how also we know it, and we usually do it. I think the Office of Public Enterprises might explain it better, because according to the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee, he is confirming that he did not. In fact, could you confirm it yourself so that I do not mistakenly or wrongly interpret you?
Yeah, in fact, the PLO asked me if the department can attend that meeting to listen. So I said no, as the committee has not taken a decision to bar the department. That is why probably they are here, because there's no decision to bar them from this meeting.
Honorable Liu Yang.
No, thanks, Chair. I think we're all of the understanding as presented by Honorable Singh, and the understanding that we all have is that, but that the case as it may, I would suggest that we also get an understanding from the department as to what is their understanding of today's meeting. Maybe we can say they were told that they must or must not come, or they were given a leeway to say if you want to, you can.
I was also more or less going to say the same thing, and I was just going to check on the rules, if there are rules that are guiding us on how this meeting should be processed. I'll just give over to the content advice. Do you want to, or the department? I thought your hand is up. The department to respond.
Well, Chair, let me apologize if there's a misunderstanding. I think on our part we did receive an invitation from the Parliamentary Liaison Officer. And I think the most obvious thing to do is to honor an invitation when given to us. I think in the spirit of the discussions today, if so, the committee feels that there'll be better off with the AG in our absence. We can leave the meeting because we have other things to do locally, I think so. Yes.
I'm giving over to the committee. Honorable Mazon.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't think in any way it was meant for DPE to leave this meeting. I think there was simply confusion as to why DPE was here, because we were told something completely different. And of course, in the spirit of keeping with the keeping Parliament costs down, one would be concerned that so many people from DPE have arrived today for what we understood was simply a briefing by the AG. But they are certainly most welcome to be here, and I think if the Parliamentary Secretary and Liaison Officer invited them, then certainly you are quite right. When Parliament invites you, you do what is right, and you accept the invitation. So I don't think in any way anyone's asking them to leave. Chair, I can tell you as the whip in charge of legislation and rules, there certainly is no rule that bars anyone from being inside one of our meetings. Our meetings are open to the public, and certainly DPE today perhaps don't form part of the presentation, because the AG is doing the presentation, but you are South Africans just as much as we are. And Chairperson, it's not my job to welcome DPE to this meeting, but if they were invited here, Chairperson, let us thank them for being here and honouring the invitation, because more times than not we complain when people don't come. What is worrying, Chairperson, however, and perhaps DPE should have this discussion privately, is the size of your delegation. But otherwise, you know, they're here and they're welcome to be here.
Thank you, Honorable Mazon. If we share the same sentiment, I think we are going to continue to with the meeting. DP, in 2015 or 2014 towards the end, the Minister of Finance, when he was putting his medium-term budget speech, on his budget speech, he spoke about the delegation of people coming to Parliament. He spoke about the restrictions that must be here, that must be there for the budgets of the departments and the entities. He specifically in one of his sentences, he spoke about the big delegations that comes to Parliament, some of them just coming to listen. And if these people that are here are all from Pretoria, we can't have such a big delegation from Pretoria. But if it's people that are working here in Cape Town, then we do not have a problem. I think the members of this committee are giving me a right to welcome the DP into the committee, and also we will try to look at the issues of the Auditor General's briefing the committee and the departments being part of the briefing of the Auditor General, whereas they are going to we're going to meet them again. We will speak about as a committee maybe to understand, to have an understanding on what is happening. But for today, DG, I don't think you need to respond to, but I think you are most welcome to the meeting. And also, if the AG is comfortable with your presence in the meeting, I don't think there is anything that can hold you back not to be part of the meeting. Thank you very much. AG? DG?
Chair, I would really urge the Chair to give me an opportunity to respond on the comment of the delegation. Because it's not a matter by accident, it's a matter that we deliberated on, and I made that decision specifically, purely because all those who are here are responsible for oversight of specific companies. So it is necessary for all of them to hear matters that relate to their company, so that in the next, as the year unfolds, they implement whatever the issues that are raised here. So it was not a mistake. It's a deliberate decision. Thank you.
Today, because I've never seen this big delegation before. AJ, I want to give over to you and hear what is your view. Are you comfortable with the Department of Public Enterprise to be part of this this meeting or not? Honorable Standard, do you still want to say something? Okay.
Honorable Chair and members, I think I can record that we don't have an objection to the department being here. In other committees, for instance, we've done two today. The departments were there, so we do not have an objection.
Thank you. Honorable Stand.
Madam Acting Chair, with that all out the way, I wanted to inform the committee and also ask them to join me in congratulating one of our committee members, Natasha Mazone, on her recent engagement.
Honorable Natasha, congratulations on your engagement. it would have been a secret for until the wedding day maybe, but we welcome you and we congratulate you on your new life that you are starting. Hope you would enjoy it. In our agenda, let's get into our agenda so that we don't lose focus. Okay. The following item in the agenda, I think I have already welcomed everybody. The following item is apologies.
The apology that we received is for Ms. Mateis, who is represented by Honorable Judith there, and then also Mr. Joseph Paulson. And then the chairperson of the portfolio committee also, who is of sick. And then that's the only two that I've received, chairperson.
Honorable Singh.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'd just like to tender my apology for tomorrow. I've done it in writing. I've got a joint standing committee on finances of parliament that starts at 9 and goes on till 5 tomorrow. Thank you.
Hi, but we will do that tomorrow. I wanted apologies for today. Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. We will go to item number 3, the briefing by Auditor General on the audit outcomes of the Department, Public Enterprise, and State-owned Enterprises that are under this department. Thank you very much, H.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. As you may have seen the slides that we have circulated, including the briefing notes, today we are going to be covering the Department of Public Enterprises and SAFCOP. The audit of SA Express is not completed yet. It's right at the end of finalization. And also right at the end, we'll be touching on the four SOEs that are not audited directly by the AG, and just give you a rundown of the audit outcomes for 15-16. To my right is just for order and structure, is Sabrand oversees the audit of SAFCO and SA Express. Carl on the far oversees the audit of the department. So we'll be fielding questions in that order, but Sabrand will take us through the main presentation. Thanks.
Good afternoon, members. Again, thank you for the opportunity for us to present you with our presentation on the audit outcomes of the public enterprises portfolio for the 15-16 financial year end. As my colleague has alluded, there's two documents that you've received. One is the slides and one is the briefing document. These two talk to each other, and it also follows the same sequence of information, so you'll be able to follow either one of them. Obviously, the briefing document contains a bit more detail in terms of what's in our audit reports on the specific department or entity, but we will talk to the presentation itself today. Firstly, just as a reminder of our reputational promise of the Auditor General is that we have a constitutional mandate as the supreme audit institution of South Africa. It exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, which is a key for us today, accountability and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. The reason for us to specifically present to you today is we want to reflect on audit work that was performed on this portfolio by assisting the performance of the assessing the performance of the entities and taking into consideration the objective of the committee producing a budget review and recommendations report later on. It's also to provide the portfolio committee with the applicable information and guidance on the public enterprises portfolio for 2015-16 audit outcomes so that they, the committee yourself, can ensure effective oversight. And then lastly, to ensure oversight to focus on areas that will lead to good governance. I want to spend the next three slides just to remind you of what is our audit about. As you can see on the slide, firstly, we assess the fair presentation and reliability of the financial statements. That's our first objective. Our second objective is to assess the reliable and credible performance information for predetermined objectives. And then lastly, we assess the compliance with key legislation on financial and performance management. So that is what our audits at the end would provide. In terms of our different audit outcomes that we talk to and the colors that you can see on the slide, the first category that we all want to achieve is the what we refer to as the clean audit or unqualified opinion with no findings. So what that means is that when an auditee produces credible and reliable financial statements that are free from material misstatements and it reported on useful and reliable on a useful and reliable manner on its performance as measured against the predetermined objectives in the annual performance plan, and also observed or complied with key legislation conducting their day-to-day to achieve their mandate. So that is what we refer to as a clean audit. The second category there is what we term as financially unqualified opinion with findings. So what that involves is where auditee produced financial statements without material misstatements, but struggled to, firstly, align their performance reports to the predetermined objectives they committed to in their APPs, or it could be both, set clear performance indicators and targets to measure their performance against their predetermined objectives, and again, and or report reliably on whether they achieved their performance targets and or determine which legislation they should comply with and implement the required policies and procedures and control to ensure compliance. The last set of slides is to give you a background in terms of our audit outcomes. Categories is then the ones that we don't want to see on the slides. Those are the qualified opinion, firstly. And in those cases, we see auditees had some challenges as to those that were unqualified, were findings, but in addition, they could not produce credible and reliable financial statements. They had material misstatements on specific areas in the financial statements, which could not be corrected before the financial statements were published, and lastly, did not comply with key legislation in certain instances. The second category on the slide is what we term as an adverse opinion. That's where auditee has many material misstatements in their financial statements that we disagreed with almost all of the amounts or disclosures in the financial statements, was unable to provide sufficient supporting documentation for amounts in the financial statements, and achieved reported achievements unreported in the annual performance report, and lastly, did not comply with key legislation. And then the last opinion that we refer to is the disclaimed opinion, and that's where auditee could not provide us with evidence for most of the amounts or disclosures reported in the financial statements, and we were unable to conduct, conclude or express an opinion in the credibility of their financial statements, was unable to provide sufficient supporting documentation for amounts in the financial statements, and achievements reported in the annual performance report, and lastly, did not comply with key legislation. So with that background in mind, as my colleague has explained, the slide structure is that we are providing you with the audit outcomes of the Department of Public Enterprises. Then we provide you with the outcomes of our public entities that we audit as the Auditor General of South Africa, which is SA Express and SAFCOL. And then there's the four entities which we do not directly audit, but we do provide you with the outcomes at the end of the slides, which is Alex Gordon, now Eskom and Transnet. The slide in front of you now explains a high-level view of the outcomes for the current year, starting with the far left on the bars in terms of the overall outcome. What we're saying is that there's a stagnation in the audit outcomes in the last 2 years, but a slight regression in this portfolio if you look at the last 3 years. So what I mean is that we're sitting with two audits in this current year, the Public of Public Enterprises and SAFCOL, as having unqualified audit opinions with findings, which is similar to last year. Just note, as we have referred previously, is that SA Express, the audit has not been concluded and therefore not included in this presentation, but it is shown there to have a comparison from the previous years. In terms of the overall audit outcome for the portfolio, we see that there is still non-compliance matters that was identified in the Department of Public Enterprises as well in SAFCOL. In the middle section of the slide, we talk about the key findings on legislation, which we will also provide in more detail in later slides. You'll see that it has also remained the same, whereas we can see that there has been key findings on legislation in the current year. First of all, which relates to material misstatements that we have identified in the original submitted financial statements, which were subsequently corrected, which enabled the department and the entity to achieve an unqualified audit opinion. Secondly, we had legislative findings on supply chain management legislation. And lastly, which we will also provide you in more detail, the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was incurred in the department and SAFCOL, which also relates to a non-compliance matter. And the right-hand side of the slide explains the quality of the annual performance plans. In this case, it's positive that in both public enterprises and SAFCOL's situation, they submitted performance information that was useful and reliable, and we want to encourage both the department and SAFCOL to continue in this way. On slide number 10, we go further in terms of the audit outcomes, the overall audit outcomes, and we talk about, firstly, on the left-hand side, what we call the key internal control assessments that we do on an annual basis. What you'll see in the first top part of that is that there was a bit of a regression in terms of the leadership assessment, and that's basically based on the oversight responsibility and the effective human resource management part of it, where you can see that we've got some concerns in both public enterprises and the SAFCOL. And that was mainly due to the fact that there were certain vacancies in both the department and in SAFCOL in key positions that we feel is very important to ensure good governance. And that directly also resulted, which we term as that there was also the lack in the good set of financial statements that was initially submitted to us, where there were certain material misstatements which were corrected later on, and also the oversight on monitoring compliance with key legislation. In the second part, in terms of the financial and performance management key controls, you can see that there was an improvement, and in that part, it was based on the proper record keeping and daily and monthly controls, where the improvement in both cases also occurred, and that is positive. But if you go below that, where we still have some concerns, is where we have regular and accurate and complete financial and performance information, and also the monitoring of compliance, which talks to the leadership consideration as well, where we found that there were some areas that was not monitored well. In the area of governance, in terms of risk management, internal audit and audit committee, we assessed that the key controls in those areas were adequate. The last part I want to talk about in that left-hand side is just on the IT controls. What we also found in both the department and in the in SAFCO, there were some dependencies in terms of the IT management, which was contracted out to suppliers, and there were also some weaknesses that we have identified in the governance controls around IT. Moving to the assurance provider assessment that we do, you'll see that what we've shared previously with the committee is that we do an assessment on the three levels of assurance. Firstly, we look at the first level of assurance, which includes senior management, the accounting officer or the accounting authorities, and the executive authority. In all those cases, you'll see it's similar to what we had in the previous year, so there has not been any movement. And then we go to the second level of assurance, and that is in internal audit and audit committee has also not moved from the previous year. And in those cases, we do find that we have assurance from those levels. And then thirdly, from the portfolio committee yourself, we've assessed it now for the first time this year after we've spoken about our intention to do that. And in the previous year, is that we've assessed that we do gain assurance from the portfolio committee. And just to explain to you how we determine that in terms of the portfolio committee, we've given you the detail on the sites at the bottom of that graph, but it's basically your oversight role in terms of a robust budget process, including the review of the annual report and our audit reports and what we produce, a follow-up on the progress made with entities to address poor audit outcomes, recommendations made in relation to the audit key audit matters from previous years to the next year, and then following up on key matters reported in the committee's prior year BRRR report. And in that case, what we've assessed basically is that this audit, this portfolio committee performed in terms of the legislative oversight requirement, and it robustly engaged with the department and its entities in terms of its role and its mandate. Which we do still have a concern, as you noted on the graph, is that senior management and executive authority did not always provide good assurance because there were certain repeat audit findings from the previous year. Moving to slide number 12, it just provides our assessment in terms of the audit work we did on the performance plans and the performance reports. As you note there, we had good quality and good standard annual performance reports from both the Department of Public Enterprises and from SAFCO. These were the programs and the objectives in each of the cases that we have assessed to audit. And the outcomes, which in all cases you can see we did not find any material findings. And as previously indicated, we do encourage the department and the SAFCO to continue in that way. Moving to slide 14, in terms of compliance with key legislation, we noted that there is, like I said earlier, stagnation in the performance on this area. As you can see in both public enterprises and Safco, we had material non-compliance matters. In the middle part of that slide, you'll see the areas that we had concerns. Mm-hmm. Firstly, as the same as previous years, we had material misstatements in the submitted financial statements, which were corrected later on, which enabled the entity and the department to receive an unqualified audit opinion. Secondly, the prevention of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure is similar to that of last year, where the department and Safco still had irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And then there were a slight improvement on the management of procurement and contract management, whereas the department has not had material findings in this area, but Safco still had material findings in this area, which is an improvement from the previous year, where the department also had material findings. And then lastly, on the consequence management, we did not have any findings in the current year in public enterprises and Safco on consequence management. If we go to the last part, the right-hand side of this slide, you'll see in terms of if we just evaluate the supply chain management legislation part, which we assess, that there were findings on the uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes in both public enterprises and in Safco, which is similar to that of last year, which is the area where there is still a concern. And in the second category there, inadequate contract management, we have noted an improvement, whereas it's only a problem in Safco currently. And then lastly, any limitations in the scope of any supply chain management matters were not noted in the current year in the department and Safco. Moving to the next slide, provides you with an analysis of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure. As you can see, there were a slight decrease, a decrease in both of the categories. The first category on the top, we evaluated the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And to note that the definition of fruitless and wasteful expenditure is expenditure that is incurred in vain and could have been avoided if reasonable steps had been taken. So in other words, no value for money. In this case, we had less than $1 million incurred by both public enterprises and Safco in the current year, and that is an improvement from the previous year, where you can see we had $24 million, and also a reduction from the previous year, which was $34 million. Just note that in the previous year and the year before, in other words, 2014-15 and 13-14, SA Express is included in those figures, but it's obviously not included in the current year's figures because the audit is not finalized yet. If you look at the right-hand side, the top two areas there, the overpayments to suppliers and the penalties and interests, gives you the analysis of what forms the amount in fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So in this case, you can see that the majority of the expenditure were incurred due to penalties and interest. If we move down to irregular expenditure, which is expenditure incurred in contravention of key legislation, where goods were delivered but prescripts processes were not followed. In that case, we also had a regression improvement in the amount of irregular expenditure that was incurred. In the current year, it was $47 million as opposed to $99 million in the previous year, and they were in the year before that, it was only $20 million. In this case, if we look at the current figure, that $47 million, $44.1 million was due to irregular expenditure in Safco, and $3.07 million in the Department of Public Enterprises. And if we look at the right-hand side, the majority of the irregular expenditure is accounted from the non-compliance of procurement processes, which is the $41.6 million. And that's basically, most of it was due to contracts that was not in place in the expenditure at Safco. And that amounts to around 38 million. Moving on to the next slide. This slide explains the follow-up actions that was done by the department and the public entities in its portfolio around when there is fruitless and wasteful expenditure or irregular expenditure. As you know, the Public Finance Management Act and the Treasury Regulations requires the department and the entities to investigate if there is such expenditure. As you can see from the graphs on the slide, in 2013-14, the expenditure was not investigated at SA Express, and the reason for that is that in that year we had a qualification or limitation on the irregular expenditure in SA Express, so there were no conclude evidence of how many irregular expenditure there was. At SAFCO, it was all investigated and concluded. At DPE in that year, there wasn't any irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure, so there weren't any investigations that was necessary. In 2014-15, you can see that the situation has improved, whereas all of the entities in this portfolio have investigated on the matters that was recorded as irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure in that year. In the current year, we see that that has continued with public enterprises and SAFCO, but SA Express obviously is not completed yet. The audit is still outstanding, and therefore we have shown it as outstanding in the graph. The details of the investigations is also included in our briefing document, which we included on our audit reports. Going to slide 18, which gives the three top root causes and follow-up on our commitments with the Minister and then also proposed recommendations for the Portfolio Committee. On the left-hand side, first of all, our top root causes, which is similar to previous years, but we have experienced a slight regression in this area, is the instability or vacancies in key positions. We've noted that there were key positions in public enterprises that was vacant for the majority of the year. Similarly, so also with SAFCO, there were key positions that was vacant in the year, which impacted on the audit outcomes of both the department and SAFCO. Secondly, the slow response by management or the accounting officer or senior management in both public enterprises and SAFCO. Although it has improved because we don't have the audit outcome included in SA Express currently, but those two entities still have a slow response in the to the key audit outcomes that we've identified. And then lastly, the lack of consequences. There is an improvement because of the previous slide that we indicated that those expenditure items that we reported was investigated. The middle part of that slide talks to the status of the key commitments by the Minister of Public Enterprises. We noted there that there is two of the commitments that was implemented and then a further four that was still in progress. We met with the Minister three times during the past year and these did have a positive impact on our audit outcomes. The commitments that was made in the previous year, as I indicated, the ones that was honored and implemented were the ones where the Minister committed to have action plans on addressing audit outcomes, and then the second one to have engagements between the committee, audit committees and board chairpersons of all the SOCs in its portfolio and the executive. The ones that was not implemented in all instances in the portfolio was the interim financial statements, which was not produced in all of the state-owned entities. There were findings in the audit outcomes, so the focus on sustaining a clean audit report was not achieved. And then the conclusion of the Government Stakeholder Management Act was still in progress at the time. And then internal audit did not effectively ensure that the audit outcomes improved in terms of making sure that action plans were followed through by all the entities and the department in the portfolio. In terms of our recommended or proposed commitments by the portfolio committee, in this case is that we recommend that the portfolio committee should request management or the department to provide feedback on the implementation and progress on action plans to address poor audit outcomes on a quarterly basis. The portfolio committee should request management to provide quarterly feedback on the status of key controls, which drives good governance. And then thirdly, the accounting officer should be requested to provide a list of action items against transgressors, which should be provided quarterly to the portfolio committee for follow-up. The next slide, slide 20, provides the audit outcomes of the four entities which we refer to as the Section 4 free entities. Those are the entities that we do not audit directly. First of all, it's an evaluation over 3 years again. The first audit, AlexCore, you'll see has not moved in terms of its audit outcome. It is still unqualified with findings, and the findings is in relation to compliance, similar to previous year. Secondly, Denel has remained a clean audit in the sense that it has not had a qualification or any findings. Eskom has remained similar to the previous year where it had findings on compliance, but an unqualified opinion on the financial statements. And then lastly, Transnet also remained the same as the previous year where it had findings on predetermined objectives and its compliance areas. The next slide gives you the information around the fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure. You can note that it has fluctuated between the two. Firstly, again, in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we can see it has increased from the previous year, and that there's a slight increase year on year if you look at the 3 year evaluation. The largest part of that comes from Eskom, where there is a 93 million fruitless and wasteful expenditure which was identified, which is currently under investigation. It consists of around 600 individual cases. Secondly, you will see that AlexCore has only contributed to around 200,000, which consists of fines and penalties mostly. And then lastly, Transnet incurred 3.9 million of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which was identified as overpayments to suppliers, redundant stock, and cancellation fees. If we move to irregular expenditure, you'll see that there was fluctuation from previous years. We're currently sitting at 138 million incurred on irregular expenditure from the four entities, whereas in the previous year it was 745 million. On the current year, the 138 million, the amount from Eskom, which was the most, was 106 million, which is mainly contributed due to non-compliance or breaches to the Provincial Procurement Framework Act and the breaches to the NEMA Act, payments to brokers, internal processes that was not followed. Secondly, in terms of AlexCore, you see has incurred 6.9 million of irregular expenditure, which was mainly due to contracts not renewed. In terms of procurement processes, all free quotations not obtained in terms of the requirements of the PPPFA Act, or there were the tax clearance certificates or the BBBEE certificates was not obtained, or payments exceeding the agreed amount. And lastly, we have Transnet that incurred 25.1 million of irregular expenditure due to non-compliance to the PPPFA Act, tax clearance certificates that was not obtained, or contracts costs that exceeded the contracts. And that is the end of our presentation. You can give us any questions that you want to maybe have clarification on. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, AG, for the presentation. I think it is clear to everybody. I think they understand also the abbreviations that are inside here in your presentation. They would be able to follow what is happening within the department and the SOCs. I will now give over to the members to seek clarity, seeking questions and questions, and raise their concerns. I only see Honorable Mazoni, Honorable Singh, Honorable Luyenge, Honorable Standa, Honorable Paulson, it's not Joseph, it's Paulson. Paulson. It's Paulson in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, I need an explanation. Why does the AG do SA Express and SAFCOL and then oversee the other ones? So I just need an explanation as to why that's done, because it is my opinion that when you deal with the state-owned entities, the AG should be 100% all over them, all the time, checking, under scrutiny like no other, because our state-owned entities have to be under more scrutiny than anyone else. So I just need that explanation, and why specifically those two entities and not Eskom and Denel, for example. Chair, then, these are all clarity-seeking questions, as you understand, because that's what we're here for today. We have read in media reports, etc., that, for example, a company like Denel, and while I understand that you didn't do the Denel audit yourself, you do the overseeing of their audits and you report back to us. Now, Denel, they claimed, did not comply with very important sections of the PFMA. Now, these, of course, are very serious allegations that are going to be made. And in fact, Denel has come before this committee and Treasury has come before this committee, and we've had conflicting reports from both to the point that we've asked for Treasury and Denel to be in the same room at the same time, so that when the one blames the other can explain to the other why they're blaming each other. See how it works? It's like nursery school sometimes. Now, today we see from your presentation that Denel got a clean bill of health. Now, it worries me as to how an accusation can be made by a department like Treasury to say that a PFMA qualification wasn't met, but then the AG, whose opinion we take as gospel, because we have full faith in our AG, says that everything's okay. So can you just explain to us how those kind of discrepancies and differences can actually happen? And then, Chair, the regression that we see happening. Often, and I mean, the AG, sometimes I worry that you get a bit sick of my letters to you. I ask you to look into certain things and to look into questions that I might have and concerns that I might have with state-owned entities. And many, many times we've brought up, and we've been together, and Honorable Singh's been here as well with me for at least 6 years now, where every time the AG comes, we ask the same questions. And that regards the targets that are set for each one of our state-owned entities. Because we see them performing badly, and we see a great financial loss. And while I understand completely that the Department of Public Enterprises cannot be held responsible completely for the loss of each one of their entities, because they oversee the entities, and then each entity has their own board, when does it get to the point that the AG turns around and says, actually, we've told you not once, not twice, we've told you every single year that your performance targets are too low, that you set targets that are too easy to achieve, and that's why we see this constant financial strain and, quite frankly, a constant managerial vacuum that exists in our state-owned entities, because it's so easy. I could walk into any of our state-owned entities, as unqualified as I am, and I would be able to meet those targets, and that's a very scary thought. So at what point does the AG just put their foot down and say, it has to stop now, and who do you say that to? Would you as the AG go to Treasury and say to Treasury, we've told them 100 times and no one's listening? Do you go to DPE and tell the minister? Have you done this and no one's listened to you? What is the situation? Because as the committee, you have to take us into confidence. Because I think the one thing that we can all agree upon is the fact that our state-owned entities are in a financial dire straits. And we've got to do everything we possibly can. And there's no point arguing with each other anymore. It's actually a state of, we're in a situation now where it's make or break. And we have to do everything in our power, regardless of political affiliation, to help our state-owned entities. So you as the AG tell us, what do we need to do to get these state-owned entities financially viable again?
Thank you, Honorable Mazoni. Honorable Singh?
Thank you very much, and thank you to the Office of the AG for the presentation. And I just want to know from information you've been given by the department, well, not by the, well, from the department, on SACS's inability to complete their financial statements, so which means that you cannot audit them in the time that's prescribed in the PFMA. What kind of reasoning have they given your side, or do you ask from the side of the office of the AGSA? I know that the DG will have an answer to that, but we'll ask him that question tomorrow, I suppose. And then, you know, I know material misstatements and having discussion with management does assist before you produce your final report. What kinds of misstatements, some few examples of material misstatements that you can cite to us, so that we just have an understanding, realizing that they have been corrected so that you don't report. Then I think on slide 10, you express some concern about leadership. Now, what I'm concerned about is the leadership that you mention as the executive authority. You say it provides some assurance. One would expect, you know, assurance from the executive authority. So how do you determine some assurance and assurance? What's the defining factors there? And I think that applies to leadership and to the executive authority. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairperson. Let me first appreciate also the presentation as provided by AG, which has actually brought us to light on matters that will generalize and think that we understand what the terminology of AG is saying to us. I think it's a presentation of a different form as it used to be. It's more clear now, and then we are able to maybe engage the department. But I would want further, Chairperson, want to understand as to what is the role of AG as it relates to the stagnation in non-compliance. At what stage do you come up with findings and recommendations to the portfolio committee that would say, take action against this particular activity that is negative in this particular entity? Then the other issue, Chair, is the, maybe I want to get closer to what Honorable Mazoni was saying in relation to the targets, achievable targets or minimal set goals. And I'm saying that wanting to maybe also get a clarity to say, what do you actually mean to say there is stagnation in compliance? Because my own understanding says stagnation is a growth that you would not appreciate. If there is stagnation, there is some diminishing kind of a growth that is not viable. Now, safe to maybe understand it in the context of Honorable Mazoni to say, are we really happy with the set targets? Are these targets really minimum to an extent that when you relate them to the outcome, of which it is not maybe your responsibility to measure the outcome and its effect on service delivery, there you might not go maybe because of your roles. But when you refer to set targets that can be achieved within a short space of time, and then people will sit and say, no, already we are unqualified, but the outcome is not commensurate to what is being said. And then maybe lastly, Chair, how would you then, because in the majority of instances, you have come out with a notion that says at least something has been done, there is some improvement that you have identified. What can you attribute that to as against issues where you find that there is no improvement and instead entities, you know, are getting deeper and deeper into mud? What is it that is being done appropriately by these entities where there is that stagnation in compliance? So it means they comply. Even if they comply at a minimal level. Now your findings and recommendations where they are ignored. So what sort of sanction do you have? Do you further go do you really would want to go further than the portfolio committee if no improvement that you are finding to be actually assisting the your audit opinions? Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. A number of my questions have been covered. So I want to find out whether you as the AG have seen the stakeholder entity compacts, because there are certain agreements between the ministry and the entities, and surely there needs to be some form of oversight and audit of the performance in terms of those agreements. You mentioned that there was quite a slow response from the departments and some of the entities in responding to what you said. Now, do you find that related to a lack of expertise or a lack of will? Another question is that you've mentioned that the audit platforms, for example, the audit committee, etc., they're all in green. However, there are material misstatements, there are problems with the supply chain management, etc. Now, surely if those platforms were functioning adequately, those platforms would be able to provide a report to the entity and department respectively for their implementation. So whilst that is in green, do you it might be, you know, based on a measurement of a specific technical thing, but what is your view of the audit measures of the entities that you oversee? And then in terms of Safcoal's irregular expenditure and the possible misappropriation of the entity's assets. I see that the case has been reported to the South African Police Service. I think I saw that last week. I just want to know who reported that to the to SAPS and the NPA. I'll leave it there for now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Auditor General. Chair, I think when it comes to the issue of not submitting timely an audit, I think it's the one thing you'd expect from any enterprise, and I find it inexcusable that SA Express didn't make a deadline. I mean, this doesn't happen. You don't just discover a week from the 12th of August that I must submit. You know, long before the time. So, and you know, I'd like to know what sort of consequences are there for this failure. I mean, we can't allow this to happen, because if it just slides this year, next year the same, we'll never know what's going on there. And then on the, I think it's the 10th slide, there's a, when it comes to leadership, and it's given like a green color for good, I want to know, in terms of determining what is good, what is concerning, what is intervention required, what are the criteria? Is this just something that you go and tick, and it can't just be something that's subjective, that you decide what it is. There must be some sort of criteria and that is used to determine what the state of leadership is, or oversight responsibility. All of those really good things that are required to for an organization to function. And then there was one last one also. I do see a problem, and I think the Honourable Stunder suggested also, is the issue competencies. I know this is not an argument for this committee, because it could be perceived as a political argument, but for example, SAFCOL, South African Forestry Company. I mean, we've got a Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Why is an entity like this over here, for example? I know it's possibly a more political argument, because we can then argue why is SA Express or all of the others here, because it could go to transport as well. But in terms of the expertise that are required to run these departments, this is one of the where we are duplicating, and this is possibly something that the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation would look at, is more optimal positioning or placement of entities that could also, sort of centralize or the expertise, as opposed to wanting to duplicate it all over. Which could be one of the reasons why we are also failing, because we now have to establish expertise elsewhere as well, other than where it should be residing. And I say should be, but like I say, it could be a political argument, and I know it's not for this department to or the Auditor General to I think so, it should be. But that's a political argument. And also, what are the consequences for these failures, like expenditure over that is incurred, which wasteful, fruitless expenditure? What sort of, I know there's the case that was, the charge that was laid for the one issue, but what is the consequences for the others? Money can't just be wasted, and are we getting the, are we following up, what is, you know, are we chasing this money down? Are we following it where it's gone and where it's been wasted? We can't just accept that it's been wasted, you know, and that's it. If it's been wasted, it means that we paid money for goods and services that we did not receive. We need to know who are the beneficiaries of these taxpayers' monies. And who has been authorizing taxpayers' monies to pay for something that we did not receive? Plain and simple. That's all for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Let me, I've got also a few questions that I want to raise. The others are more similar to what the other colleagues have raised, but maybe somewhere, somehow not, no, they would have a line that is not that similar to them. But I want to suggest to the committee first that I think we'd need to rethink in the suggestions or in the issues that were raised by Honorable Mazoni. We need to rethink if we can't call the private auditors, audit companies that are auditing, the companies that the Auditor General is overseeing, so that all those companies that are under our supervision, we get their outcome or their report, also a briefing from those private audit companies that are auditing those if it's in line with our work, I think it should be a good idea to have them here. And also, I would also suggest that we again have another workshop with the Auditor General, and specifically focusing on our as much as the Auditor General can give us a general overview or a general way of them auditing, but we need to bring it specifically to our mandate as the committee and our entities and the department. How to, because our department is different from the other departments. You see, it works differently to the other departments. We need to check on that with the Auditor General. That's my suggestions that I would want to make. My question to the Auditor General regarding those companies that you oversee, you do not audit, would be, have you ever sat down with the companies that are auditing, with the auditors that are auditing those companies, so as to know some other deep issues that are happening in those companies? I know you might have information, but I just want to check if there are any interaction between you as the Auditor General and with the private companies that are auditing the state-owned, because at the end of the day, those companies are state-owned companies. In your slide, on slide 5, in your financial unqualified opinion and findings, where you clarify how do you work when you get when you want to see or you see a financially you want to put an unqualified opinion, financial unqualified opinion, and then you put the points down there. If you come up with statements, financial statements that are without material misstatement but struggle to align with their performance and all the performance indicators and the targets, do you suggest to them, to the to public enterprises or to the state-owned companies, especially on their objectives, to say, or on their targets, or their objectives, especially their objectives, if they are unattainable. For example, I might make a very dubious or something that would never happen. If their objective is unattainable, you see that this is an objective that is unattainable, they will never attain it. They can't change the sky to be from blue to green, or from green to, from blue to red, but they've put it as an objective of theirs. And you think this is unattainable, they will never be able to do it due to the following, maybe they don't have the resources to do that, and also their mandate, they are moving away from their mandate. Do you suggest something to them, and what is their response if you find you find out they did not do what you suggested to? You say Safcol, you encourage Safcol to ensure the sustainability of their audit outcome, or the way their performance. But their performance is unqualified report. Are we not supposed to work towards a clean audit? Or if a company has an unqualified report, it's better off than having a clean audit? Maybe I do not understand the line between a clean audit and the unqualified report, with findings or without findings. And the other question, or the other concern, is also my concern on SA Express. If SA Express is not included in the audit report, and SA Express has missed the date of putting their report in or to be audited, which you say it's the 12th of August, do you have any suggestion that you can make, a concrete suggestion that you can make to the committee, or put in front of the committee, so that the committee take note of it next year? Come next year, it doesn't repeat itself, because it has already repeatedly been done by SAX, especially the issue of not coming to present the annual report or the annual financial statement in front of the committee. What is your suggestion on that? Where do you see within the department and just be I'm not sure if in the presentation, maybe I've missed it, the specific places where there is no accountability. Specific places and the where the committee should specifically look at in the department. I think that is what I would want to suggest. But also, DP, the Auditor General, the question of penalties and the question of penalties especially has been coming out for quite some years within the portfolio committees and within the other portfolio committees, I think, where I have served before. You seem not to have a way of actually dealing with people who do not comply with laws that are supposed to be complied with. The specific question, What is your problem? Is the problem the policy? Is the problem the PFMA? Maybe the your mandate is that the is your mandate is it not giving you enough teeth to work, or what is the problem? Because this question has been coming out for quite some long, and I've been listening to more members here. They want to know, do you have penalties? Are they responding to your penalties? If they do not respond, what are you doing? Or you absolutely have no power in that regard? Thank you very much. I will give over to the Auditor General to respond to. Honorable Singh.
Just one short question, I forgot, on the question of the IT. They did say that there were suppliers and they were a bit concerned. There was some concern. Could you just tell us, you know, whether the department doesn't, I mean, yeah, the departments do not have its own IT capacity, and what did you find? Thank you.
Thank you.
Over to the Auditor General.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I think, I'll start on the question of the Section 4.3s. These are the four entities that we do not audit directly as the AG, but we do exercise oversight. Why do we only audit SA Express and only SAFCOL and leave the other four? It's a mix of issues and factors, Chairperson. For instance, I'll mention capacity. Every PFMA department and entity must submit financials by the 31st of May and be fully audited by the 31st of July. So if you put all of them in the pot and you include the provinces for that matter, you know, the issue of capacity within the office then becomes, you know, a consideration for us to keep to that 31st of July deadline. So in that respect, we do work with private firms in the industry, especially BE firms. We're also driven, you know, by that imperative in terms of empowering private firms, especially small and black firms, to give them these audits. Specifically, Transnet, Eskom, Denel, and even Alex Corp is audited by this type of entity. So it's a variety of issues. Not that we do not want to audit them. Capacity is an issue, is a consideration, and our BEE imperative and obligations also do play a role. SA Express, what is the reason for SA Express being late? I think the committee will recall, I think the past two or three years, SA Express has been late in terms of their audit outcomes. And this year, unfortunately, you know, the past has been repeated. But I think I will ask the indulgence of the committee there to perhaps let this current audit that is underway to conclude properly, so that we can give you a full picture of what are the issues, why, you know, did the delay take place, and where do we end up with SA Express? Because I think as it is right now, we might give you a half-baked cake that possibly may not help the committee. But the end is in sight.
But is that not what made you to be late or not to finish the SA Express audit? Is it not because the SA Express has given as according to they asked for the extension. So my apologies, members of the portfolio, but you seem to be, as I'm listening to you, it's as if you are giving us an apology from SA Express through you. I'm not sure, but maybe I'm listening you, I'm getting you wrongly. But if the issue is here, is that SA Express did not respond to your call as per the PFMA is once, or is SA Express
Is it you who made SA Express not to respond to your call as Auditor General? Because it looks like you are making excuses for SA Express to me. I don't know to other members.
It's certainly not the intention, Chair. For instance, if you look at the last 2 years, SA Express couldn't be signed because they're waiting for a guarantee from National Treasury. It took a lot of months, even 8 months after year end, for them to finally be signed off. I think the committee members will be aware of the situation and the financial viability at SA Express. So some of those situations haven't turned around. But like I said, perhaps to give a fuller picture, you know, it's not only the financial viability part. You know, we would avail ourselves back to this committee in terms of giving you why did the audit take so long, and, you know, considering the financial viability before we can sign all those assurances that we need for them to procure funding, for instance. So we would need to, you know, complete that picture fully and you know, take it through the various assurance levels so that we give you a quality and a full report. So we do make ourselves available there. Right. If I were to go back to the Section 4.3s, the ones that we do not audit, what role do we play, you know, insofar as those audits are concerned? Just because we do not audit them, it's not like we do wash our hands off. During the year, we do meet with the auditors themselves at various milestones. Before they issue their audit reports, for instance, they will reach out to the AG and ask, you know, for guidance on certain grey or complex matters. Because, you know, this is our field, so we're 100% comfortable when it comes to the audit of compliance, for instance, or even the audit of AOPO. So we do avail ourselves to them. We sit in these audit committees, Transnet, your ESCOM. Obviously, we're not the direct auditors, but we do play very closely to those. And I can also mention, as an office, you know, there's been a project, if I can call it, that to almost formalize, you know, these interactions at both the management of these 4.3s and the auditors of these 4.3s, so that they don't live in an island of their own and perhaps one day, you know, maybe the AG needs to be involved and we are so far behind the game, we do not even understand what ESCOM does. So those are some of the interventions that we do there. We do train them as well if they ask for training, to bring them up to speed with ourselves. Like I said, we deal with these issues every day, and to also ensure consistency. In terms of what are some of the actions that we do, you know, when you talk about stagnation, I think we related that especially to the department. What role do we play over and above just coming here and you know, maybe saying the same story year in, year out? I think if we specifically refer to the slide on the assurance providers, I think it's slide number 12. Slide number 12, if you look at all those assurance providers, like senior management, we engage with them throughout the year. Accounting officers, many members here may know also that as the AG, even in year, during the year, we do take what we call the dashboard and engage with the accounting officer. It's going to be a desktop exercise, obviously. It's not going to be as detailed. Where are you relative to your key internal controls? If you proceed this way, you definitely are going to fall off the cliff again if that is the situation. Just highlight those issues in year, instead of coming right at the end of the year where there's very little that can be done. We are intensifying that process. We call it the key controls reviews of those entities and departments that avail themselves. We will be intensifying that process going forward to really test you during the year and bring the insights to you, whether it's quarterly or half yearly, just to see if you proceed this way and your asset register still doesn't tie up to your financials, you most certainly are heading for trouble. So those are some of the interventions there. The executive authority, as is, one of the slides has made mention, will reach out to minister, preferably quarterly, sit with them, update them on their portfolios, where are the pitfalls, what are we finding in year again, not just at the end of the year when, you know, the train has, you know, fallen off the tracks already. They say, Minister, we would like to secure commitment 1, 2, 3, and 4 from you to say you will follow up in your portfolio and make sure that things do change insofar as outcomes are concerned. Internal audit, where we can cooperate and share insights in terms of the combined assurance. We work together. They, you know, they have access to our reports. We do have access to their reports so that we see what areas of internal control have they covered so far and what areas can we use for the purposes of our work so that there's no duplication and there's efficiencies in the process. Audit committees, obviously, we are the standing invitees to every audit committees. We'll have in committees when the time comes and almost brief them on a one-on-one or almost on a personal level in terms of the issues on the ground and the detail behind perhaps some of the big words that we use and where the problems are, whether it's in the finance section, audit committee, please address this as soon as possible. So we do engage at the various levels, and obviously, like we are here today, engage at the portfolio committees. And I think the members will also remember and appreciate that in terms of our legislation and the mandate, constitutional mandate that Sabran read to right at the beginning of the presentation, you know, ours is to enable oversight. So we're not one of those to almost force the hand of the accounting officer to take action against transgressions. We'll bring it to your attention every time we meet you. We'll put pressure on you. We will almost make you feel uncomfortable if you don't do those things, but it's not for us to move people from their roles that have transgressed some of these prescripts. I think for now I will leave it over to give over to my colleagues.
Thank you, Jay. I think in terms of the question around the targets, in terms of setting targets too low and then maybe achieving it easy, our role in auditing of the annual performance plan and report and the predetermined objectives of the entities is that we evaluate it against two criteria. The one is the usefulness criteria, and the second one would be against the reliability criteria. If we look at the usefulness criteria, we audit it against the requirements that are set by National Treasury, which generally follows the SMART principles, that those objectives or programs and targets are set so that it is SMART at the end of the day, and that's how we evaluate it. And then secondly, going from there, if we've satisfied that objective, we will go to the reliability objective to indicate whether the reported achievements against the targets is supported by supporting documentation. So that is our assessment. Whether certain targets are within the mandate of a department or entity, we do consider it based on the SMART principles, and we do consider whether that targets are set to achieve the objective that the department have or the mandate the department have or the entity has. The level of targets that is set is not evaluated by ourselves in terms of what level it is. We do know that the level of targets is set between the executive authority and the entities, and those are generally very robust discussions, as our experience is. So the level of targets is set between the executive authority and the accounting authorities of those state-owned entities. In terms of the question around misstatements, what kind of misstatements there were, if we look at public enterprises, there were misstatements with regards to their contingent liabilities and guarantees. It is isolated to those two instances and not overall reflection of their financial statements. In terms of SAFCO, there were misstatements with regards to the the financial statements that is consolidated from one of their subsidiaries, which is Infloma, the subsidiary that they have in Mozambique. There were certain amounts that was not correctly transferred from that entity to the group financial statements, which were material and then adjusted in the final financial statements. Secondly, there were also misstatements with regards to the tax figures in the SAFCO group financial statements. So those are the misstatements that there were.
Just to come in there, members, in DPE it was contingent liabilities and guarantees, and it mostly relates to, I think DPE has been severely had a capacity constraint in the finance division. And these are typically things that you do once a year, and if we remember, if we refer back to our recommendations, is that you do this regularly, that you do quarterly financial statements, but full financial statements. So as DPE gets capacitated again in the finance department, we will recommend that they implement that practice again. It's like an exercise. The less you do it, the bigger your chance of slipping up on it is.
The question around our concerns about leadership, firstly around the executive, we do note that there were performance measures that were achieved in the current year in the portfolio. However, there were still key vacancies in the portfolio that is a concern, which is on the minister's level, which needs to be addressed. Subsequently to the year, financial year that we're assessing now, it in some cases it was addressed. Secondly, in terms of the audit history, if you look at the outcomes, it has not changed from the previous year, so it's based on that. And then also, we do believe that there needs to be more emphasis on implementing action plans around audit outcomes. Not just having action plans, but actually actively pursuing that those action plans are implemented during the year, not just at the end of the next financial year, but on a quarterly basis.
I think also this is where the internal audit can come in. What we are reporting currently is almost the symptoms, the sneezes and the coughs of things not going well. So when we look at the action plan, it's important that the internal audit goes and verify whether that action taken by management has had the desired result. So that you don't come to year end and you say, we've achieved our action plan and we've addressed all the, you know, we've had our cough syrup and nobody's sneezing anymore, but year end you come and you realize that you've missed the root cause. There's still an underlying problem and this problem keeps on persisting.
I think in terms of the leadership or the senior management assessment in terms of providing some assurance, I think that if you go back to our three top root causes, the first one what we're saying is the vacancies. And instability and vacancies within the portfolio. So what we've experienced is that you usually get a preparer of a report or a set of financial statements, but the review does not happen because in some cases those positions were vacant and it wasn't efficiently delegated to somebody else. And that needs to be addressed. Which in subsequent cases, in some situations, it was addressed, but during the year that we assessed, there were still some key vacancies in very important positions. The question around our role as the Auditor General in terms of the stagnation of the non-compliance area, and what do we do and what recommendations can we provide? I think we do play quite an important role in terms of making sure that these matters do not reoccur in the following year. As Salisa, my colleague, has alluded to, is that what we do is we do quarterly reviews of these entities and the department to make sure that things are addressed. We do recommend that is also done within this portfolio's action plans as well to make sure that on a quarterly basis, action plans are drafted and implemented, and the status of implementation is also monitored, especially around non-compliance, because we have been sitting with non-compliance in this portfolio for a couple of years now on the same sort of matters, which involves supply chain management and irregular and fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. In terms of I'm just looking at the questions. There were a couple of questions that was more or less the same, so we'll, if there's anything that we left out, we'll come back to that.
Sorry, can I just... Oh, go ahead, Carl.
I've never had a green before. So. We've also issued a booklet in the past that's got a comprehensive section on accounting remedies that can be taken. The first buck stops with the accounting officer and the accounting authority of each entity to make sure that action plans are in place and that remedies don't or that the repeat findings don't occur. Or if there's persistent continuation of these findings, then the executive authority needs to take action in this regard, and I think that's also where the committee comes in to make recommendations to the executive authority. I think from our mandate, ours is a reporting mandate. So we come year after year after year to all the relevant role players, and we show our reds and our yellows and our greens to everybody to take note of and to take heed. Other than that, we carry access cards. They're not badges. They only allow us into places.
I think one other recommendation, perhaps unique to this DPE portfolio that we always make, is the sharing of information. You've got an entity here, Denel, that's been clean at least the last 3 years. We've got Transnet that is stuck on AOPO. Eskom struggles with their procurement. Meanwhile, you've got others that are perhaps doing better, than the others. So what we've recommended is those quarterly forums that the department can organize with these entities and share information. We've even availed ourselves in the area of AOPO to say we can come and present to you, Transnet, you're struggling in this area. Perhaps call all the other entities and we take you through the framework from Treasury again. How do we set targets? How do we set indicators? Make sure they're well-defined, they're specific, they're measurable, and so on and so forth. So I think it's an offer that continues to stand in terms of us capacitating this particular portfolio. Because there's certain similarities among them, even though they're in different sectors and industries, so that the sharing of information continues. So we'll just leave it out there for this committee as well. Thanks.
Okay, I see your hand. Do you want to say something?
EG, before. Okay. Honorable Stan, are you giving him
to... One of my questions.
Thank you, Chair. The next question that I had was about the question around, do we see the shareholders' compacts? Do we order them? Do we have them? Yes, we do. We do get the shareholders' compacts when we do perform the audits because that sets the basis from what they have committed to assess whether it is the same what they report on. Which is one of our key considerations, whether it is consistent. If it is not consistent, then we will report that it is not consistent. So we do have that in our position.
Madam Chair, the reason why I asked that question is that, especially my colleague, Honorable Mazzone, this committee has been asking for those shareholder compacts for a long time. Now, how is it possible that it is available to the AG, but to this portfolio committee, it's unavailable? Why is it available to the AG and not to the portfolio committee in our capacity to do oversight? If the AG is telling us that provides the basis for their audit, how we should use that as the basis for our oversight. Can you give us the copies of those shareholder compacts, please?
It's for the AG. It was given to the AG. We must find ways if we want to get a copy. We can't
ask them from the AG. I think we will not be doing any favor to anyone to do that. And I think the Auditor General, section is one of the offices, the highly regarded offices in the land to deal with private and we are part of that. We are part of that. But the answers were given, but we are not satisfied about the answers that were given, why we are not getting these things. But I think we need to find a specific office to get those shareholder comments and get why we can't get, not because we can't get them from the minister. We have been asking them from the minister, and we were told in the last meeting or in some last year that the shareholder compacts of the SOEs are part of the reports that we were given by the public enterprise committee. They are there in their reports, and still then we were not satisfied. I think we don't need to push other offices to do it for ourselves. We must do it on our own, but we must stick to the to our mandate as well.
Madam Chair, I was teasing when I said the AG should hand it over to us. I am aware of that separation. But perhaps this committee needs to stop asking questions and to start making demands. It's unacceptable that this committee hasn't got those compacts, and I think that should at least be included in our BRRR.
AG, can you continue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next question was around one of our root causes around the slow response, and that's mainly due to the fact that there were instabilities and vacancies in key positions. So it was not due to that they were not the expertise or competence or lack of will to respond to our requests. There was a question around the material losses and the report of that to the police prosecuting authority. That was reported to the prosecuting authority by the board of SAFCO. There is a new board that was appointed in the previous year, and they have reported it to the police. There was a question around the criteria on slide 10 that we evaluate key controls in terms of leadership, financial performance management, and governance. Yes, we do have a criteria that we evaluate those elements against, and that is based on the audit that we perform on a yearly basis and also our quarterly engagements that we have with the department and the entities. In terms of, there was a question around the consequences for irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I think it is important to go back, and I think the member asked it, and specifically in the context of if goods are not received, so is it money that is wasted? What we've added to our audit procedures in the last audits were to assess whether goods or services were indeed received. And I think it's then important to go back to the definition of irregular expenditure, where it indicates that the processes were just not followed. Yes, there might be undue processes that can happen in the process of procuring goods and services, but we have confirmed in all of those cases that goods and services were received to the department or the entities. I think there was a question, I think we did answer it in some portion in terms of the where the department or the entity has an unqualified audit opinion, But there is weaknesses with regards to the targets in terms of whether it is set too low. I think the question was is that we do assess it against the SMART principles. So we do assess it against whether it is within the mandate of the department or the entity, and whether it is attainable or not attainable. I think that was the one question which the chairperson referred to in terms of the blue sky and the red sky. Yeah, so we do assess whether it is attainable within the mandate of the entity or the department.
Chair, I think also one of the things that that's on the discussion and that we've committed to assist the minister with is to sit with all the entities and also look and explain to them how we go through the audit procedures of AOPO and target setting and what are the things that, that we are looking for, because we find that there's almost a mismatch where some of the entities can have good audit outcomes on their predetermined objectives and some of the others not. And we are big believers in the sharing of expertise and the sharing of knowledge between these entities when it comes to things like this. You know, where you do things well, help others. Where you are struggle, ask for help. So that's one of the things, and I think we've indicated this commitment as ongoing, this quarterly interaction with the entities.
And then I think the last two questions, I think I'm going to first address the one around the IT concerns that we had. In both the department and at SAFCO, there were also some vacancies in that key positions. And for that reason, the department and the entity sourced from service providers to fill the gap in the year that we have assessed these audits. And for that reason, there were certain dependencies on third parties, first of all, which needs to be addressed, and secondly, there were certain policies and procedures that was not yet in place to govern the IT environment in the department and in the entity, SAFCO. I think then the last question that I have, and my colleagues can help me if I've missed anything, were around what do we see as the key recommendation for in the presentation for this portfolio committee in terms of to address. And I think what we indicated in our presentation is that we do think that on a quarterly basis these action plans to address audit outcomes in the previous year needs to be monitored by the portfolio committee. Yes, from a dashboard point of view, and make sure that those things are implemented, not just drafted, but implemented. There is one question about the NAL that my colleague is going to address. Thanks.
This is let's tread carefully, Chair. Let's first talk theoretically. As the audit, we look at whether the financial statements are fairly presented, whether the entity complies with key laws and regulations, and whether their predetermined objectives is useful and reliable. So in terms of the NAL audit, the entity has done that. As for disclosure, I think the entity indicates on page 91 in the annual report that they and Treasury are in negotiations or discussions, as we call it. And I think as the committee has rightly also pointed out, that there is some disagreement on how well the discussions are going. And as auditors, we look at things that entities disclose on this regard. So at this stage, the fact is disclosed. I think the outcome of this discussion or investigation that Treasury will launch will then trigger the follow-up event in terms of an audit perspective. So that's why the unqualified audit opinion was expressed. It is disclosed and the matter is being addressed between the entity, and I think it will be also closely facilitated by DPE in the negotiations. I think the one thing that I think that we recommended also and that we're discussing with DPE in this environment is especially to have a very prudent system for tracking these kind of requests, so that you can easily, I mean, 30 days is honestly not a lot of time to respond. So once, if you are close enough to these entities, you will know that these kind of requests are going to come. And then you've got adequate time to respond and say, good guys, okay, yes, we acknowledge you, we hear you. However, we want to interrogate the implications of this transaction before we give you the go-ahead. So do not assume, because I have not responded to you in 30 days, that I have given you permission. And I think that is something for Treasury as well that we need to be very firm on recommending. Because it's easy in the sea of people to lose these kind of things and for entities then to assume the opposite, especially when you do these kind of significant transactions. So we're not saying it's wrong or it's right. It's just whether we track these things. And I think that's also one of our pet project that we hop on with the department is, you know, on how close can they be to the entity before they're seen as interfering. And I think it's up to them to tread that line carefully. But I think from our office, just being involved in the audit committees, not involved, sitting in the audit committees as an observer, we have gained a lot of insight into these entities, because this is where your risks are discussed. This is where your actions are tracked for the entities. And I know the department has had their legal people look at it and advisors look at them and advising them to do a certain course of action, but we still say that's an environment that needs to be explored for the greater good. I think as the members have pointed out, we need to be close to these entities. We need to know what keeps them awake at night. We need to know when they're going to take big decisions, so that as a shareholder oversight department, you can be close and you can advise the minister, on all the issues. If you're going to rely on things that are in written format, you might not get the full extent of what is behind that written request if you are not provided with all the information. I think the committee has echoed that sentiments where you don't see the shareholders' complaint. It's very difficult to comment on. Because one of the things is, I mean, typically the entities in the department come and they present their annual performance plan, which gets tabled in Parliament, which should then be by the basis of their performance. And that's where the committee then should interrogate and ask, do you have the resources available? Do you have the people? Are there performance contracts tied to these things? And I think we've had the discussions with the DG, and I'm from our discussions that we have with the DG, I think I'm very excited having them in this portfolio. If we look at his background and diligence with impacts and all of these kind of things. So his position being filled is a very prominent step in the right direction for the portfolio. But when the portfolio gets that, sorry, I'm digressing, to those performance plans, it's asking, you know, do you have the resources? Show me the people. Who's going to do this for you? How are you going to do this? How are you going to report at the end of the year that you've done this? What's the evidence that you're going to keep? What's the systems that you've got to make sure that you achieve it? On a quarterly basis, if you report that you are not achieving a target or yet you've fallen behind, what's the actions you're going to take to catch up with this? You know, what is your contingency plans to make sure that you meet this target at year end? And so keeping the people that should be accountable, keeping them accountable for these decisions.
Thank you very much. I think your recommendation as the AG, you are on point, as you have said that we must get quarterly reports, and as much as they will not be able to respond now or will not respond now, I think they have heard from you that you expect us to get quarterly reports, and their quarterly report must be measured on dashboard. I think also when they give us their reports, their KPIs that they need to perform on and reach I am trying to emphasize this point, so that whenever they give us their performance report, their quarterly reports, they give us according to their KPIs of that specific period, so that when also we do our oversight, we are able to detect where they falter and where they are not performing very well, and then we will be able to also be as efficient as possible as the committee. Honourable members, any follow-up questions? Honourable Standa, Honourable Mbanga Ninfanyako, Luyenge, Honorable Singh, the three. Thank you very much. Funo Skuti Sukute, Honorable Sukute.
Thank you, Chair. Are you satisfied with the performance management agreements with senior and middle management staff? Are they in place with every employed person that is responsible for delegated authority? I see that you are concerned about bonuses being paid out. Well, not that you're concerned that they've been paid out, but you're suggesting that they should be linked to performance targets. Now, were there any particular positions that you found excessive bonuses were paid in relation to the non-performance of that particular function? Not the person, but the function. With regards to the SCM issues, within the entities, because it wouldn't be across entities, but within entities, did you find any pattern of, for example, where BBBE certificates weren't obtained, or three quotes weren't obtained, or any number of, you know, the requirements? Did you find that the payments for those ones that didn't meet the requirements were paid to the same supplier, perhaps the same company? Did you find any pattern like that? And or any other relevant details to how those SCM issues, what's the word I'm looking for? Will present themselves. Then I want to know whether you have the historical knowledge. Now, looking back at the slides, the 2013-14 year, the departments and a number of the entities overall did okay. And then there was a specific regression in 2014-15 and then 15-16. Do you have an idea, or can you pinpoint the reason why there started to be this general regression from the 2014-15 financial year? Is there any event that it can be attributed to? And then I just wanted to follow up on my question about the audit committees. Now, you say that you sit in those audit committees, and some of the issues that I've seen you've raised in the various reports is that the targets aren't smart. And I see that in the compacts, the actual predetermined objectives, 33% of them are either inconsistent and 50% of them are not smart, etc. Now, does the audit committee have access to the compacts, number one? And number two, do you find that they are generally competent? Now, it's fine to have an audit committee that is functioning, and it kind of relates to my earlier question, which I'd just like a better answer here, because if you have a strong, functional, competent audit committee, many of these issues can be resolved as they issue and do the necessary monitoring and make the necessary recommendations.
Linda, Sihlalo wami, Linda. Hayi, ndifuna mbona ka. Hayi, sigqibile for ngoku. Oh, ima.
this situation where the AG does SACS, SAFCOL, DPE, and then the other four entities are kind of have a different, you've got a different auditing agreement there. Since when has that arrangement been in place? Has it been there forevermore, or is this recent? Since what year has this taken place? Engels.
Comrade Stan, you. No, thanks, Chair. Mine is simple, Chairperson. There is this term of an audit query. Here an executive or a head of department is employed, and a package include a performance bonus, which I believe a performance bonus comes on top of the normal functioning of the warm body. Now, an outcome has not been achieved, and then a performance bonus is paid to the warm body. Is there no audit query? If the Public Finance Management Act stipulates a notion that says we are committing to pay you this, but if you go beyond this, this is what you are going to get. So what the general practice has been, that government departments understand irregular expenditure, and then there are corrupt practices that are found, adverse audit opinions by AG, but the 13th check is there. Is that normal?
Mm-hmm.
Chair, I'll pass in the interest of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Singh. AG,
okay. To answer some of the honourable members, I'm not going to answer all of them, but I'm going to do them in a different order, and I'll try to keep time into consideration. I said I'll consider it. There are certain things governed by the Public Service Act in terms of remuneration of employees. So there are certain elements that remains the 13th check. That is not a performance bonus. That is different. The two are separate. When it comes to the performance bonus, there are performance contracts in place. I think the DPSA is busy with a large-scale project to make it more specified to link to the performance indicators and the performance targets. But I think nothing stops the entities from doing it themselves already. And DPE is a good example of this, and I think many of the colleagues you see here around the table have not heard about that thing called a performance bonus in a long time. So I think they at least practice what they preach. It needs to then also be rolled down to lower levels. For each DDG that's responsible for an entity, you've got a job, but alone you cannot achieve it. You need your support structure. If you look typically at our environment, you've got a corporate scorecard, and then it rolls down to each level. What is my input into this strategy so that each person knows what he or her is responsible for? So there's a distinction. 13th check is one thing. Comes from Public Service Act through labor negotiations, bargaining councils, and all those kind of things. It's very difficult to move, and I think that is why the strike is averted or comes every year on public servants. But then the performance agreement is that discretionary amount that is awarded for things being done well. And they have felt the whip there. Whether the question, whether payments has been made, I think in this year's financial statements there is disclosure on irregular expenditure made in terms of that, where individuals did not meet the criteria and got scores, and then it's asked then also up to the department then to determine if they can recover that amount for those ones. Also, if we look at the question on the regression, yes, there was a very definitive point in time, but I think we've spoken to it ad infinitum in terms of the key vacancies. There's two key vacancies that left the department at a specific year that was compounded by the financial director that also fell ill in that particular year. If you look at DPE, they've operated now how long without a permanent head? And that's why I say we were so welcome the appointment of the DG. DG can then, and I think we've had discussions, and I submit to his, what do you call it, no, not his, to his hymn, the hymn that he sings, where I say you do not choose a CFO for the sake of filling a body. You choose a person that will fit the organization. And so we look forward to that position being filled soon. After you've got a CFO, then you can fill the finance director, and hopefully when you've got a full complement in that team again, they can run as the unit that they were. So yes, there was a specific time. The DG left, the former DG left, the CFO left, and the finance director left in a very short space of time. The person that they had acting then also left suddenly. When you got a person from Treasury assisting you that was also pulled out mid preparation for the audit finalization does not do them any favors. So I think in that regard, key vacancies, it hurts, and the department can attest to that. The takeover of the SAFCOL and SA Express, yeah. We planned for one and we got the other one at exactly the same time due to a request of the minister. When we took those over. That was...
In terms of the plan, which Theresa, my colleague, has alluded to, we have a plan that we have initiated in terms of approaching the overall audit portfolio that we have, which indicates where are the entities that we need to take over from the private sector in terms of spreading the skills and the capacity and which ones to leave with the private audit firms. So in 2013, we were asked by the Minister of Public Enterprises at that time to take over the audit of SA Express, which we had to conclude two audits in 1 year, and since then we've been auditing them. And the subsequent year, the same year, as my colleague said, we initially decided that we would have taken over SAFCO as an audit in this portfolio. The reason for that was it was actually also discussed in this portfolio committee and with the shareholders unit of public enterprises, is that we... Before that time, we only audited the department and we never audited one of the entities ourselves. So it was difficult for us to come to a portfolio committee and then discuss issues which is prevalent in the portfolio with regards to SOCs and not just the department. So that was the decision why we took one of the entities at that stage. And it was also because the private audit firm's contract term came to an end. And that was specifically with SAFCOL at that stage. That's why we took that one over. The question around the supply chain management, any patterns or whether there's any payments to the same company, I can talk about SAFCOL. In terms of SAFCOL, there isn't any specific patterns, but as you noted, there is matters that has been handed over to the police, and those are specifically cases where there is patterns of malfunction of certain payments that was made. So we await the outcome of those ones.
Okay, the competence of audit committees, as you have noticed, Chair and members, we dealt with the two entities today, the department and SAFCO, and over on page 9 is our assessment there, where they fall in the second level of assurance. Yeah, so that's where we assess your... Sorry.
I think if we go to last year's general report, the report that we summarized all our audit findings in, if I can read from there, if the member doesn't want, as we recognize that for audit committees to provide the required level of assurance as second-level assurance providers, they are dependent heavily on the reliability of assurance provided by senior management and internal units, audit units. The lower the assurance provided by these two role players, the more difficult it is for the audit committees to accurately assess the control environment of the auditee, including being reassured that all significance are effectively managed. And say audit committees are therefore advised to consider observing. Okay, then we continue. So if we look at our assessment of the other assurance providers, the senior management, and we say that that is concerning and provides some assurance, then automatically it jeopardizes the level of assurance provided by the audit committee members. So we do assess the audit committees in terms of their competence, in terms of their independence, in terms of their skills that they bring to the party, but they are tied in terms of their hands, in terms of what they are presented and what they are provided with. I think if we look at the outcomes, the areas that we highlighted is the compliance with laws and regulations. So obviously in that area there are gaps in terms of the information that's required. So you can get a PFMA checklist where it tells you everything is okay. And the other area is the material misstatements to the financial statements, where you are provided with information and you're making decisions on, but there are things that are significantly wrong in those figures.
Through me, ne? Yeah, you which person? I'm go busy. Honorable Stan, continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. My follow-up, I just asked the question as well, that what was the issue between the senior management level and the audit committees, the gap between that, and it was responded that that is related to the information that is received and the non-compliance, etc. My last follow-up question is regarding the misstatements which was covered by Honourable Singh, but I specifically wanted to find out whether those misstatements were error. I know that under SAFCOL you mentioned that that information from another sub-entity wasn't included or sort of something in Mozambique, but Was that an accidental error, or should that person have known better? How did that misstatement happen? Because how those misstatements occur is quite important in relation to the misstatements themselves. So any relevant information on that, please.
I also want to check with the Auditor General on my question that when you made your recommendations to SAFCOL, you spoke of them sustaining what they have. I specifically asked if are we not working towards, or you it's not of your opinion to work towards a clean audit if the audit is unqualified and it has no matters that are. Therefore, you are satisfied with the entity. The entity can't work towards a clean audit. It's not possible.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first question around the material misstatements. From our assessment, it wasn't intentional in both cases, on public enterprises and with SAFCOL. It was a matter of, again, coming back to the vacancies that occurred. In terms of the question around our assessment and our recommendation for SAFCOL to sustain its audit outcomes, it was specifically in reference to the performance information that they've, because if you look at the outcome in the previous year, they had material misstatements which they corrected in the performance
objectives, whereas in the current year there weren't any material misstatements which had to be corrected, and that is what we recommended them to sustain. In terms of the audit outcome, no, we do expect each and every entity to be able to achieve a clean audit, and the simple basis for that is that we do see it with other entities in the public sector, so it is possible for the entities to achieve clean audit outcomes.
And Chair, as important as we deem our jobs, if we look at the real nuts and bolts, we are looking at the housekeeping side of things, you know, the things that support service delivery. So once you get your housekeeping clean, then you can start focusing on service delivery and stop working for us.
Thank you very much. I see that there are no follow-up questions. Members are satisfied with the questions that have the responses that they have got. I want to thank the AG to be consistent on your job and in helping us on how your job enhances our work and our mandate as this committee. Thank you very much for that. And I don't want to thank the department because they're not part of this committee. They're not part of this committee. Thank you very much. And thank you, members, for coming to the committee meeting that started at 2 and you were on time. Thank you very much. Keep it up. South Africa is looking forward to you as the leaders that have been elected to come to Parliament and work for South Africans. In our agenda, we have consideration and adoption of draft minutes. I wanted to suggest something to you. If we can't do them tomorrow, we're in the portfolio committee. We have got a portfolio committee that starts at 10, at half past nine. Can we start with the draft minutes and the program and look at the program of the committee and then give over to the department? Because I don't want to say to you we must do it after the department has presented, because they take too long to leave when we ask them to leave the room. Even now, I if I can say the AG and the department must leave, it's going to take them 30 minutes to get out of that door. So please, tomorrow we will do the consideration and adoption of minutes and the program. Thank you very much. The meeting is... And in our order up, because I did not adjourn the meeting and you're already standing. This is in those Bangalama Nisigwe Ekawen. Go. Load shedding. No, load shedding order. The meeting is adjourned.
Ha, did you? Ha. Protect.